Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter. Narrated by Dylan Lynch, with performances by Thomas Keegan, James Konacek, Nick DePinto, Scott McCormick, Thomas Penny, Ken Jackson, Elizabeth Jernigan, Evan Casey, Christopher Graybill, Dan Sontag, Yasmin Twazon, Joe Brack, Nanette Savard, Ren Casey, Michael Glenn, Dylan Lynch, Eric Messner, Johan Detweiler, and Christopher Sheeran. The Last Gunfighter, number 23, Montana Gundown.
It was nice to be home. Of course, a man like him didn't have a home in the strictest sense of the word like most folks did. Frank Morgan reflected as he and his friend, the old-timer named Salty Stevens, rode through a valley with majestic mountains looming over it. There was a good reason Frank was known as the Drifter. Every time he had tried to put down roots in the past 30 years or so, something had happened to prevent it. Often, something tragic. Despite that, he had grown to regard the entire American West as his home. Recently, he had spent time in Alaska and Canada, and while he had to admit that those places were spectacularly beautiful, it was nice to be back in the sort of frontier country where he felt most comfortable. Cattle country, like the places where he had grown up in Texas, even though this particular valley was located in Montana. Frank saw stock grazing here and there on lush grass. This was his kind of territory, and his kind of people lived here.
Pretty, ain't it, Frank?
Yep. Well, don't get all carried away and start waxing poetical about it.
Frank grinned. The expression softened the rugged lines of his face a little. Frank was a broad-shouldered, powerfully built man who had been wandering the West for more than 30 years since coming home to Texas as a youngster after the Civil War. It was not long after that he discovered, through no fault of his own, how fast and deadly accurate with a gun he was. Other people became aware of that natural talent of his. Some tried to use him to their advantage. Others just wanted to test their own skills against his in contests where the stakes were life and death. And with each man that fell to his gun, Frank Morgan's reputation grew. He left his home in search of peace, but gun trouble followed him. And as years passed and men died, the reputation became more than that. It became a legend. He was tagged with the nickname Drifter because of his habit of never staying in one place for very long, but some folks had started calling him the Last Gunfighter. In these days, when the dawn of a new century was closing in fast, most people considered the Old West to be finished. Hell, it had been more than 20 years since Jack McCall put a bullet in the back of Wild Bill Hickok's head in the number 10 saloon in Deadwood. Wes Hardin was dead too, also shot in the back of the head by a coward. Ben Thompson had gone under. Smoke Jensen was living the peaceful life of a rancher in Colorado, and nobody quite knew what had happened to Matt Bodine. So it was understandable that people considered Frank Morgan to be the last of a dying breed, that of the shootist and pistolero. In truth, he wasn't. There were still quite a number of men in the West who were quick on the draw and deadly with their guns. They just didn't attain the notoriety such men once had. The newspaper and magazine writers liked to write about how modern and civilized everything was. Only the dime novelists still cared about the frontier. They never got all the details right, but there was some truth in the feelings they conveyed. Even Frank, who had been cast as the hero of a number of those lurid, yellow-backed, totally fictional tales, had come to this realization. Clad in worn range clothes, including a faded blue bib front shirt and a high-crowned gray Stetson, Frank rode easy in the saddle of a leggy golden sorrel stallion he had dubbed Goldie. He was leading a rangy gray known as Stormy, and a big wolf-like cur called Wolf trotted alongside the horses. Frank, Stormy, and Wolf had been trail partners for a long time, and although Goldie was younger, he had fit in with them too. Salty wore a fringed buckskin vest over his flannel shirt with a battered old hat pushed down on his thatch of white hair, which matched his bristling beard. He rode a pinto pony and led a sturdy pack horse. The packs were full of supplies given to them by Bob Coburn, an old friend of Frank's and the owner of the Circle C Ranch where they had spent the past few weeks. Wolf, Stormy, and Goldie had been watched over by a livery owner in Seattle for months while Frank was off adventuring in the Great White North. But on receiving a telegram from Frank, the man had put the animals in a livestock car and a train had delivered them to a siding near the Circle C. Frank and Salty had ridden down from Canada to pick them up at the ranch, and the reunion between Frank and his old friends had been a happy one. For a while, Frank had been content to stay there and visit with Bob. He got a kick out of demonstrating gun and rope tricks for the rancher's 10-year-old son. Salty spent hours telling wild, hair-raising stories to the youngster, who seemed to have a knack of his own for yarn spinning. It was a pleasant time. Eventually, Frank got up one morning and knew it was time to move on. That was why he and Salty were now ambling along this valley in a generally eastward direction. Where it would take them, Frank had no idea. He didn't figure it really mattered all that much.
Are we still going to Mexico? We've been talking about it for a good long time.
We said we were going to spend the winter there. It's not winter anymore. It's the middle of summer. And a beautiful one at that.
Yeah, but Mexico's a long ways off. It'll take us a pretty good spell to get there, especially since you don't believe in getting in no hurry. I figure we should start thinking about heading in that direction.
We can do that. Start thinking about it, I mean.
You're a dadgum deliberate cuss, you know that?
A man gets that way when the years start piling up on him.
There's been a heap more of them piling up on me than on you.
They could have bantered like this for hours, rocking along peacefully in the saddle in the midst of this spectacularly beautiful scenery.
Oh, Lord. You're thinking about getting in the middle of that ruckus, whatever it is, ain't you?
I'm curious.
Frank's keen eye suddenly spotted movement in a line of pine trees about 200 yards ahead. A second later, four men on horseback burst out of the trees.
They're headed for them rocks.
They might not make it, because an even larger group of riders emerged from the pines about 100 yards behind them. Frank reached for his Winchester.
What are you doing?
Figured I'd even the odds a little.
We don't know who those hombres are. Might be owl hoots, and that could be a posse after.
That's why I intend to aim high.
Well, it's been more than a month since anybody tried to kill us, so I reckon we're overdue.
Salty reached for his own Winchester and pulled it out of its sheath. Frank aimed over the head of the pursuers, who appeared not to have noticed him or Salty. The pursuers slowed suddenly and started milling around in confusion. The delay was enough to give the four fugitives a chance to reach the safety of the rocks. As they disappeared behind the boulders, the men who had been chasing them swung around to face the new threat. They charged toward Frank and Salty.
Whoa! I don't think they're firing warning shots, Frank.
Come on, Wolf.
Leading Stormy and the pack horse, the two men pounded toward the little hill. It was barely big enough for all of them to crowd behind it. He swung behind the hill and instantly dropped out of the saddle. His feet had barely hit the ground when he charged 10 feet or so up the slope and threw himself down on his belly.
We still aiming high?
Reckon we'd better. Those fellas could still be lawmen.
Mighty trigger-happy badge toters if they are.
Frank and Salty aimed over their head. One of the riders suddenly threw up his arms and half fell out of the saddle, catching himself at the last instant. The man slumped on the back of his horse, obviously badly wounded. Frank was about to say something to Salty about not following the plan when he saw puffs of powder smoke coming from the rocks where the four riders they'd seen earlier had taken shelter. With the four men in the rocks and Frank and Salty behind the knoll, the gunmen were caught in a crossfire. First one, then another, and then the whole group yanked their horses around as they must have realized the bad position they were in. They spurred their mounts and galloped back toward the trees.
They're lighting a shuck!
For now. We better be careful, though. They might double back and try again. I think we'll stay right here for a while.
Really? I figure we go talk to those other fellas and find out what this is all about.
If they want to palaver, they know where to find us. They're probably pretty curious as to who it was that pulled their bacon out of the fire.
Curious, maybe, but definitely cautious. Long minutes crawl by with no sign of the four men emerging from their cover in the boulders. But then, one rider appeared, guiding his horse with his knees and holding his rifle steady in both hands, and the others trailed slowly out of the rocks behind him. They were on the alert for trouble as much as the first man was. Nothing happened, though, as the four men rode across the grassy flat toward the knoll. Frank and Salty watched them come. When they were about 20 yards away, the men reined in.
You still up there?
We're here.
Now who are you?
Could ask the same thing of you, mister.
The man sheathed his Winchester. He took off a flat-crowned brown hat and sleeved sweat from his forehead. He appeared to be in his mid-20s, a well-set-up young man with brown hair and the sort of permanent tan that indicated he spent his days working outdoors.
My name is Hal Embry. My father is Jubal Embry. This is his range we're on, the Boxed E. These are three of our hands, Bill Kitson, Ike Morales, and Gage Carlin. And now you know who we are. Reckon it's only fair you return the favor.
I'm Frank. My part here is called Salty. Just a couple of rannies riding through these parts.
Well, we're surely obliged, the two of you, for taking a hand in that fight, Frank. If you hadn't, Morgan and his gunnies might have done for us.
At the mention of that name, Frank stiffened and glanced over at Salty with a frown. The old-timer shrugged. It wasn't like Morgan was such an uncommon name. There were plenty of hombres carrying it around all over the West.
So why don't you come back to the Boxed E headquarters with us? I know my pa would like to thank you, too, and we can offer you a mighty fine dinner and partial payment of the debt. Our cook's the best you'll find in Montana. She's my ma.
I could do with a home-cooked meal. It's been a few days since we left the Circle C, and trail grub just ain't the same as woman-cooked.
All right, hang on, and we'll join you.
Frank and Salty went down the hill and retrieved their horses. They swung into leather and rode around the knoll, leading Stormy and the pack horse, and Wolf came with them. As they came up to the other men, Frank saw that the three punchers were keeping a watchful eye on the trees. They were being careful, too, in case the gunmen came back and started shooting again.
I'm pleased to meet you fellas. Just passing through these parts, you say?
That's right.
You don't happen to be acquainted with a man named Gaius Baldridge, do you?
Gaius? What in tarnation sort of name is that?
Latin. The ancient Romans used it some.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's Latin for low-down snake. You don't know him, then?
Never heard of him until just this minute.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Since Brady Morgan works for him, and that was Morgan and his men you were shooting at. But since you just rode into this part of the country, it was possible Baldridge might have sent for you.
To do what?
To sign on as regulators for him.
Regulators? You mean we just waltzed right into the middle of a dad-blasted range war?
I'm afraid so. Baldridge is an old, open range man, and he doesn't like it that my pa filed an official claim on this part of the valley last year and moved out Baldridge's stock. And he's been trying to run us off ever since.
And he brought in regulators to do it. Most of the time, that's just a fancy name for hired killers.
And Brady Morgan and his crew sure fit the bill. But there's no need to sit around here all day, John. It'll be nigh on supper time before we get back to the house.
He lifted his reins and turned his horse. Frank and Salty fell in beside him. The three cowhands brought up the rear, spreading out some and riding with their rifles across the saddle in front of them.
Those gunnies jumped you for no good reason?
That's right. The boys and I were just checking on the stock in this part of the valley when Morgan and the others showed up and started shooting. And we lit out. But I don't figure we would have gotten away if you and Salty hadn't pitched in and given us a hand.
They still outnumbered us by quite a bit.
Yeah, but we were forded up good in those rocks, and it wouldn't have been too easy to rouse the two of you from that knoll. Plus, we had them between two fires. Morgan might be a lot of things, but he's not a fool. And once he saw the layout, he knew he'd suffer some heavy losses, even if he managed to kill us all. I guess he figured it'd be better to wait and try to wipe us out some other day.
You said this isn't open range anymore. I haven't seen any fences.
Well, we haven't gotten around to fencing off most of the Box E just yet. Barbed wire costs money, and we're sort of cash poor. And to tell you the truth, my pa's enough of an old-fashioned cattleman that he doesn't like the stuff. He's a little slow to change. It took my ma and my sister quite a while to convince him to file a claim on the land legal-like. But he finally saw that that's the way things are going these days. Well, the land's ours, all right. The claim's on file, official and proper, down in Helena.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah, things are changing all over. Most of it sticks in my craw, too.
You'll get along with my pa, then.
True to the young man's prediction, the sun was almost directly overhead when the six men rode up to the ranch headquarters. It was a nice-looking layout, Frank thought, with a two-story, sturdy-looking log ranch house, a bunkhouse and barn made of whipsawed planks, and several pole corrals. A smaller pen near the ranch house held a couple of milk cows, and someone had put in a vegetable garden, too. There was nothing fancy about the box tea, but it had a comfortable look about it, as if a family could make a good home here, if they got the chance. The ranch house had a big porch along the front of it. As the riders approached, a heavy-set man with thin and gray hair and a gray goatee stepped out of the house with a double-barreled shotgun in his hands. From the man's powerful bearing, Frank guessed this was Jubal Embry, the owner of the Box D.
You all right, Hal? One of the hands said he thought he heard some shots coming from the west pasture a while ago.
He did hear shots. Brady Morgan and his gun wolves jumped us while we were checking the stock over. Might have done for us too, Pa, if these drifters hadn't come along and helped us out.
Drifters? How, you damn fool? That's Frank Morgan, the gunfighter. He's Brady Morgan's father.
Frank didn't know what was more of a shock, having that scattergun pointed at him or hearing that he was the father of a regulator, a hired killer. Frank had one son, Conrad Browning, who had been led by a tragedy to abandon the life of a successful businessman and now roamed the Southwest using the name Kid Morgan. And there was a girl down in Texas named Victoria who might be his daughter. Frank wasn't sure about that, and Victoria's mother had always refused to say positively one way or the other. Victoria was confined to a wheelchair, the victim of a bullet intended for Frank himself, but she was married to Frank's old friend, Texas Ranger Tyler Beaumont, and he knew she was doing well. Every so often, one of her letters caught up to him. Those were his only two children, as far as he knew, although, to be honest, he had been with other women from time to time over the years. None of them had ever said anything to him about being in the family way, but maybe they wouldn't have. And he hadn't learned of Conrad's existence until the young man was nearly grown, he reminded himself. Was it possible that he had other offspring out there somewhere? He had to admit that it was. Those thoughts flashed through his head as he looked down the twin barrels of Jubal Embry's shotgun. He hadn't budged since Embry pointed the greener at him. He didn't want to give the rancher any excuse to jerk those triggers.
Paul, wait. You must have it wrong. Now, these hombres helped us.
Are you denying it, mister? Are you Frank Morgan or not?
I'm Morgan. But I never heard of anybody called Brady Morgan until today.
I trusted you.
Are you loco? You trusted us for good reason. We kept those no-good varmints from gunning you.
Why didn't you tell me your real name?
I did. Frank's my real handle. But once you started talking about somebody else named Morgan, I thought it might be a good idea to wait a while and see what else I could find out about what's going on around here.
Well, now you know. That bloodthirsty whelp of yours is working for Baldridge and trying to run us off land that's rightfully ours. But he can't do it. He can't get rid of us without killing us.
I believe you. But Morgan's a common name. Just because the man ramriding Baldridge's regulators is called that, it doesn't mean he's related to me.
Then why does he keep going around telling everybody he's the son of the famous gunfighter Frank Morgan?
All I can tell you, Mr. Embry, is that Salty and I didn't know anything about any of this until today. Not about Baldridge, not about the trouble you've been having, and for sure not anything about this Brady Morgan.
I suppose he could be telling the truth, Paul. But...
You think it's a coincidence they showed up just after those gunnies were trying to kill you? Don't be so blasted dumb. It's a trick. That's what it is. Baldridge is trying to slip these men in amongst us so they can work against us.
Well, I don't see how.
Did they shoot any of those regulators?
No, I think it was Gage's shot that plugged one of them. It looked to me like they might have been firing high.
Ain't that a surprise? I swear, boy, they pulled the wool over your eyes. But they can't fool me. Get off my range. Get out now before I blow you both out of the saddle like I oughta.
You're making a mistake, mister. You got it all wrong.
I don't think so. Now get.
We're going.
Hal, get in the house. You three, ride along with Morgan and whatever the old pelican's name is, and make sure they get off our range. If they give you any trouble, shoot them.
Hal looked over at Frank.
Now, I'm pretty mixed up about all this, but I appreciate what you did for us.
You're welcome.
Hal, now!
Frowning in embarrassment and anger, Hal dismounted while Frank and Salty turned their horses away from the ranch house. Frank saw that several more punchers had emerged from the bunkhouse and the barn. The men watched with wary, slitted eyes as Frank and Salty rode past. They had heard enough of Embry's bull-like bellowing to believe that these two strangers were enemies of the Boxed E.
Maybe this'll break you the habit of going around trying to help folks. That's the most surefire way of getting a heap of trouble I ever saw.
Seems like when you and I met, I was trying to give you a hand.
Yeah, well, that was different.
The three cowboys trailed behind them, rifles still held at the ready. But when they were out of sight of the ranch house, one of the men nudged his horse up alongside Frank's mount.
Gage Carlin.
Gage was middle-aged with the raw-boned, weather-beaten look of a veteran cowboy.
For what it's worth, Mr. Morgan, we're obliged to you too, like Al said.
Thanks, Gage. And also, for what it's worth, I was telling the truth back there. I don't know this Brady Morgan or Gaius Baldridge either.
My bones say you're telling the truth. Can't go against the boss, though. No offense.
None taken. I've ridden for the brand in my time, too.
Not for a while, I expect, judging by the stories I've heard about you.
Not for a while. But some of those stories you mentioned were likely just big windies.
Yeah, some, maybe. Not all, I'll bet.
Nah, not all.
Is there a town somewhere the way we're going?
Yeah, settlement called Pine Knob. Didn't start out as much, but it's growing.
Does the railroad pass through there?
Nope. Closest train station is in Great Falls. There are a couple of good eating places in Pine Knob and a decent hotel if you're looking for a place to stay. Some nice saloons, too.
Now you're talking.
Where does Baldridge's range run?
He has the whole eastern end of the valley. Pine Knob sits in between right on Loco Creek. Folks call it that because of the way it twists around so, but it runs generally north and south and cuts the valley right smack in half.
Baldridge used to run his stock from one end of the valley to the other?
Yep. But he never filed claim on any of it, except the land his headquarters sits on at the far end of the valley. Miss Faye is the one who figured that out.
Who's that?
The boss's daughter. Smart as a whip, she is. I probably shouldn't be saying this, but she got the head for business that Hal didn't. He's a top hand and as good a ramrod as you'd ever want to work for, but,
I understand.
Yeah, Miss Faye found out her daddy could file on the range and wouldn't have to share it with Baldridge's B-Star spread anymore. We've always had trouble with Baldridge trying to hog the grass and water. Once it was done, we pushed all the B-Star stock east to Loco Creek. Baldridge pitched a fit, but there's nothing he can do about it. Not legally, anyway. So he filed on his half of the valley and started trying to crowd us out with regulators.
Ain't there no law in these parts?
Pine Knob's got a marshal, but he don't take no sides in what goes on outside of town. And a deputy U.S. Marshal gets up this way from Helena now and then, but you can't count on him being around whenever there's trouble. Folks still handle most problems on their own. We've had pot shots taken at us before, and there's been trouble in town between our crew and Brady Morgan and his men. Today's the first time they've tried to out-and-out murder some of us on Box D land. Probably won't be the last.
No, probably won't.
They rode over a shallow ridge, and Frank spotted some buildings on the flats about a mile away where a line of cottonwoods marked the twisting course of a stream. The men reined in, and Carlin pointed.
That's it. That's Pine Knob.
Why in blazes they call it that? I don't even see a knob, let alone one covered with pines.
Well, it's not much of a hill. You can't see it because it's on the other side of the creek past the settlement. A few years ago, it was covered with pines, but then folks came in and started the town, and they cut them all down for lumber to make the buildings. I guess you could say the name's all that's left of the original Pine Knob.
If that don't beat all, folks are too quick to tear down and build things that ain't as good as what was there to start with.
You could be right, sir, but I gotta admit, I do like having a place closer than Great Falls where a fella can get a drink.
Well, you may have a point there.
We'll head back now. You fellows will keep going, right? We don't aim to make any trouble for the Box D.
That's right. You have my word on it.
Good enough for me. Come on, boys.
We didn't get that dinner the Embry boy promised us, and I was sure looking forward to it. Maybe say we find us a hash house down yonder in the settlement. Get us surrounded in our bellies. Maybe we wet our whistles and ride on. Might be able to get out of this valley by dark.
I thought you might want to spend the night. Fill up on something besides trail grub and sleep in a real bed for a change.
Daggone, I know it. I purely did. You can't just ride away, can you? You gotta mix in and get to the bottom of this whole range war mess. You gotta find out what the story is in this Brady Morgan varmint.
Wouldn't you be curious if you found out you might have a son you didn't know about?
I just might. I wasn't always a scruffy old billy goat, you know. I used to have a way with the ladies.
I don't doubt it. Anyway, I didn't say we were going to get mixed up in any range war.
You didn't have to say it. I've rode with you long enough to know how trouble follows the Morgan clan.
Salty healed his paint into motion. Frank rode after Salty. He hated to admit it, but the old timer was right. For decades now, trouble seemed to follow Frank wherever he went. And from what he knew of Conrad's life now, the same was true of Kid Morgan. He supposed he couldn't expect things to be any different with this Brady Morgan, whoever he was. Most of Pine Knob's buildings were on the east side of the creek, Guy's Baldridge's side, so to speak. But as Frank and Salty rode into the settlement from the west, they passed a few businesses and some residences. Among the businesses were an adjacent blacksmith shop and livery stable, and a couple of saloons, one called Corrigan's Casino, and another that was, according to the sign, the Popular Saloon. Judging by the sleepy appearance of the place, that was wishful thinking. Of course, at the moment, none of the establishments in Pine Knob seemed to be doing much business, Frank noted as he and Salty rode over the bridge that spanned Loco Creek. A few horses were tied up at the hitch rails in front of the boardwalks on both sides of the main street, and a wagon was parked in front of the general store. The heads of the mules hitched to the wagon drooped, and their tails flicked lazily at flies. Frank looked along the boardwalks and didn't see any other movement.
Ain't what you call a bustling settlement.
It's siesta time.
Yeah, in Mexico, which is where we're supposed to be heading, remember?
We'll get there one of these days. And folks like a little nap after dinner anywhere it gets hot in the summer.
We ain't had dinner yet. Is there something wrong with your memory?
No, and my sense of smell is just fine, too. Take a whiff of that.
Oh, Lord, where's that coming from? I smell pot roast and taters and fresh baked bread and oh, is that apple pie? Pour me to the pearly gates, because heaven's got to be around here somewhere close.
Not exactly heaven, but those smells seem to be coming from that building over there.
It was a frame structure that had been painted the same shade of red that was usually used on barns. And appropriately enough, the name on the sign propped inside one of the front windows was the Feed Barn. Frank and Salty dismounted in front of it and tied up their horses. The mouth-watering aromas were even stronger inside. A couple of men sat on stools at the counter to the right, and one of the tables covered with blue check tablecloths was occupied. The midday rush seemed to be over, which was fine with Frank. He had never cared much for crowds. As domestic and appealing as the surroundings seemed, the man behind the counter wearing an apron was just the opposite. He was tall, but he carried himself hunched over with his head thrust forward, so he seemed to be shorter than he was. He was mostly bald, with a fringe of white hair around his ears and several days' worth of stubble on his cheeks. His left eye was covered with a black patch, and his right glared at the newcomers with suspicion.
Well, what you want?
Couple of meals. Whatever you're serving up will be fine.
Damn right it will be. You come in here, think you can push around an honest man.
Whoa, up here, hoss. Ain't no call to get a burr on your saddle. We ain't trying to push anybody around.
You calling me a liar?
At that moment, the door into the cafe opened and a woman came inside. From the corner of Frank's eye, he saw the startled look that came over her face. She hurried toward the counter.
It's all right, Solomon. I can take over out here. You just go back in the kitchen.
Better be careful, girl. These two gunnies came in and started giving me trouble. Maybe you better go fetch Marshal Trask.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
She went behind the counter and took the man's arm. Gently, she steered him toward the open door that led into the cafe's kitchen.
Don't worry, I'll take care of it. I apologize for my uncle. I wasn't really expecting any strangers to come in this time of day, so I thought it would be all right if I ran over to the store for a few moments.
Your uncle doesn't cotton to strangers, I reckon.
Oh, no, I'm afraid not. He's been this way ever since he came back from the war. He was with Grant and was wounded at the Wilderness. My father looked over him for years, but now, well, we're all that each other has left. He really is a very sweet man once you get to know him.
If it was up to me, we wouldn't be around that long, but I just got one question, Missy.
Oh, what's that?
Is that cantankerous old codger the one who does the cooking for this place?
Well, that's right.
And it tastes as good as it smells?
Well, that's two questions, but yes, it does.
Well, then bring it on. Anything that smells that good, I don't care if old Santa Annie himself cooked it.
Two pot roast specials coming up.
A few minutes later, she emerged from the kitchen and put two plates heaped high with food in front of them. Then she filled two cups with coffee from a pot that was simmering on a small stove and passed them to Frank and Salty as well.
By the way, I'm Katie Storm. You already met my Uncle Solomon.
I'm Frank. This is Salty.
Are you just passing through Pine Knob?
That was the plan. For some of us, anyway.
We'll probably be here for a day or two.
You're not gunmen like Solomon said, are you?
Who do I look like? Wild Bill Hickok?
Not exactly. But you're different.
We're not hired guns.
But you've heard about the trouble here in the valley? Between Mr. Baldridge and the Embrys?
We have. But it's not what brought us here.
But it might be enough to make you stay a while. Is that it? Now that you've seen you can hire on with Brady Morgan and the rest of Baldridge's regulators?
Not interested.
Katie looked at him intently for a long moment, then nodded slowly.
Maybe you're telling the truth. I've got a hunch you are. But it's none of my business anyway. Let me know if you need that coffee heated up.
Folks in this town are crazy or touchy or both. You sure you don't want to just finish this meal and then leave?
I'm sure they'll all warm up to us once they get to know us, like Solomon there.
He inclined his head toward the kitchen door, which was only open about an inch now. But Solomon Storm's good eye was visible in that narrow crack as he stood on the other side of the door and peered suspiciously at them.
Good Lord! That hombre gives me the fantods.
Frank looked over his shoulder and saw that three men had come in. One was the leader of the trio. That would have been obvious from the way he carried himself, even if the other two hadn't hung back slightly. He was young, in his 20s, but his eye seemed older than that. His Stetson was thumbed back on a shock of thick black hair. He wore a wine-red shirt, a black leather vest, and dark gray trousers that tucked into high-topped black boots. Two pearl-handled revolvers rode in black holsters on his hips.
Those horses were tied up out front. A sorrel, a gray, and a pinto. Who do they belong to?
Who wants to know?
Brady Morgan, old man. And if those are your horses, you better get ready to die.
Katie, you'd best go back in the kitchen.
The cafe's customers had gotten to their feet already and were edging toward the back door.
Well, Mr. Morgan, I don't want any trouble in here.
Won't be any trouble to kill this pair of old fools, sweetheart. Well, what about it? I asked you a question, mister.
Those are our horses.
I thought so. I don't know if it was you or one of those worthless box D hands who killed Jack Simmons, and I don't care. I'll settle with them later. I got you here right now.
You ambushed those cowboys on their home range. They were just defending themselves, and we gave them a hand.
Home range. That claim Jubal Embry filed as phony as all get out. Mr. Baldridge will prove it in court, too. He owns all this valley, and the Embrys are nothing but damn squatters.
Ma'am, I sure would appreciate it if you'd go out into the kitchen.
Frank didn't look at her as he spoke. Instead, he searched the face of Brady Morgan, hunting for any sign of resemblance to the face he saw in the mirror every time he shaved. Frank looked for other resemblances as well, to women he had known 25 to 30 years earlier. The problem was, he wasn't sure if he could remember all of them, and even the ones he did, their faces had faded in his memory. Brady didn't really look like him, he decided, but the young man was of a similar size and build, and although Frank's hair was graying now, in his youth it had been dark like Brady's. And there was something else, a vague familiarity.
What the hell are you staring at, old man? Trying to memorize the face of the man who's gonna kill you?
Well, that's enough. Nobody's gonna kill anybody. At least not in my cafe.
The last customer to slip out the cafe's back door had left it open, so Frank didn't know anyone was there until he saw Brady's eyes flick past him in that direction. It wasn't a trick. Brady looked distinctly annoyed.
Like the lady said, nobody's killing anybody unless you hombres force me to use this greener.
This is none of your business, Marshal.
The hell you say? Blood being spilled anywhere in this town's limits is exactly my business.
Somebody must have scurried down to the marshal's office and told him there was trouble brewing at the feed barn. Gage Carlin had told him the lawman wasn't taking sides in the feud between the Box D and the B-Star, but obviously the man intended to maintain law and order inside his jurisdiction.
Miss Storm, you need to either get down behind the counter or go out in the kitchen. If I touch off both barrels, it'll be a clean sweep in here.
And it'll do a lot of damage and get blood all over the floor and everything else.
You can always go through their pockets and collect enough pay for your trouble. I expect the magistrate to approve that. Money might be a little bloodstained, but it'll spend.
Frank kept most of his attention focused on Brady Morgan, but he glanced over Brady's shoulder at the man who stood in the open doorway. The newcomer was medium height and very slender, with long, snow-white hair and a close-cropped beard of the same color. He wore a black suit and black bowler hat.
Brady, I've been looking for you and your men. I saw your horses outside.
Sorry, Mr. Baldridge. The boys and I were on our way back to the store from the saloon. We spotted those horses at the hitch rail. I recognized them. They belonged to the men who helped Hal Embry earlier today. The men who shot Jack Simmons.
We didn't shoot anybody. We were just trying to spook you and make you turn tail. Which you did.
I'm ready to go back to the ranch. It's your job to accompany me. Go outside and I'll join you in a moment.
Mr. Baldridge.
Now, please, before Marshal Trask loses his patience and creates an incredible mess in here.
Let's go.
The three of them trooped out as Baldridge stepped aside to let them pass. Brady Morgan was the last one out the door, and he paused long enough to glare over his shoulder at Frank.
This isn't over, old man.
I figured as much.
When the three gunmen were gone, the marshal circled around Frank and stepped in front of him. The lawman was stocky and middle-aged, with a well-fed look and gray hair above a broad, florid face. Again, the eyes were the most telling sign, Frank thought. The badge toter wasn't as soft as he appeared to be at first glance.
I saw you fellas right in a while ago. Didn't take you long to land in hot water, did it?
I apologize for the part my men played in this near disaster, Marshal. Brady is a fine young man, but he's a bit impetuous at times.
Like I've told you before, Mr. Baldridge, you and Jubal Embry can work things out between yourselves or in court. That's none of my business. But I won't tolerate any gunplay here in town.
Yes, I've spoken to Brady and the other men about that. I shall do so again and attempt to reinforce their understanding of the issue.
You do that.
The rancher turned his level, gray-eyed gaze on Frank.
My name is Gaius Baldridge. I own the Beastar Ranch.
I know who you are, Mr. Baldridge.
I want to extend my apologies to you as well, sir.
Not necessary.
Oh, I think they are. Do you happen to be looking for work at the moment?
Huh. I don't think that young fella who just left out of here will be interested in working with me.
Yes, but he doesn't make the decisions. I do.
Sorry, we're just passing through.
If you change your mind, the headquarters of the Beastar can be found at the eastern end of the valley. Good day to you, sir.
Don't let the way he looks and talks fool you, mister. Gaius Baldridge was the first white man to settle in this valley. He's fought Indians, rustlers, and Montana winters for a long time, and he's plenty tough. My name's Trask, by the way. Roy Trask.
This is Salty Stevens. My name's Frank Browning.
What did you do to get on Brady Morgan's bad side?
Poked our nose into something that doesn't concern us.
Morgan and more than a dozen other men were trying to kill Hal Embry and some Box D hands while they were on Box D Range. We happened to be riding through there, saw what was going on, and pitched in to give Embry and his punchers a hand.
Yeah, I reckon that'd do it all right. Baldridge keeps Morgan on a pretty tight rein here in town, or at least tries to. But everywhere else in the valley, Morgan seems to think he's a law unto himself. He's just about right, too. You say you're just passing through?
That's right.
Probably a good thing for you to keep moving, then, as soon as you finish that food.
It's gone cold by now.
I'll get you some food that's hot.
We'd be obliged to you, Miss Storm.
Remember what I said about moving on.
We're not likely to forget.
Marshal, would you like a cup of coffee?
Might be a good idea for me to stay here a while you fellas finish your dinner.
Trask settled onto the stool to Salty's right. Frank had sat down again, already on the stool to the old-timer's left.
Morgan and the others are probably on their way back to the Beastar with Baldridge by now, but it never hurts to be careful.
Katie poured the coffee for Trask, then pushed open the kitchen door.
Solomon, I need a couple more plates out here.
I heard. Just give me a minute.
Did you meet Solomon?
We did.
His bark's worse than his bite, as the old saying goes. He's really a pretty nice fella.
That's what I told him.
Katie took away the plates with the cold food and replaced them with fresh meals a few minutes later.
What's behind all the trouble between these two ranches, anyway?
And what business of yours would that be, Mr. Browning?
Well, since Salty and I got shot at once today because of it, and nearly did a second time, I figure that gives us a right to know what it's all about.
You could have a point there. Like I told you, Caius Baldridge was the first white man in this valley. The first one who came to stay, anyway. Reckon there were probably a lot of explorers and fur trappers who passed through here back in the shining times. But Baldridge came and started a ranch. Place didn't even have a name at first, because there wasn't any need for one, or for brands on his cattle. All the cows in this valley belonged to Caius Baldridge.
Then Jubal Ember came in and started his ranch.
That's right. From what I hear, because I wasn't around these parts then, Baldridge wasn't too happy about it. But he figured there was enough range for both of them. They weren't what anybody'd call friends, but they got along all right. They even closed ranks now and then and worked together to keep out anybody who wanted to come in and start a smaller spread.
But that all changed when Embry filed on the half of the valley west of Loco Creek.
How come you asked me about this when you seem to have all the facts already?
I don't know all of it. Brady Morgan said that the claim Embry filed was no good.
That's what Baldridge's lawyer down in Helena says. According to him, when Embry filled out the paperwork, he got some of it wrong. Of course, it was really Embry's girl, Faye, who filled out the papers more than likely, or at least told Embry what to put on them. That girl's got plenty of smarts.
So I'm guessing Baldridge filed a counterclaim on the western half of the valley, and now the whole thing is waiting for a judge to come along and straighten it out.
That pretty much sums it up. Except Baldridge has gotten impatient and brought in Brady Morgan and some other men who don't have any rope burns on their hands, if you know what I mean. I don't know who's right and who's wrong. All I know about the law is how to enforce the town ordinances. I don't mind telling you, though, I'm not real happy about Baldridge bringing in regulators. Sooner or later, there's going to be bloodshed, and I don't want it in my town.
Can't blame you for that. Why don't you send for the sheriff or the deputy U.S. Marshal and let him keep the peace in the valley?
The folks down in Helena know what's going on up here. You'd have to ask them why nobody's done anything about it yet.
I never heard of this Brady Morgan. Has he got a reputation?
As a fast gun, you mean? Well, sure. He's the son of Frank Morgan, after all. You're bound to heard of him. The gunfighter they call the Drifter.
I've heard some about him.
Brady inherited Morgan's speed with a gun, I guess. He's killed several men in fair fights. I don't know exactly how many. And the men he brought in with him still have all the bark on them, too. Nobody on the Box D can match up to that bunch when it comes to gunfighting. What I worry about is that Jubal Embry will bring in some hired killers of his own, and then it'll be outright war. Not much doubt about that.
Katie Storm had been moving around some behind the counter, doing this and that, but she stopped across from the three men.
Oh, Marshal, don't be so gloomy. I will figure out the way to keep things from getting that bad.
I'm glad you'd like to think so, Katie. So would I. But I'm not sure it's going to happen that way. Oh, I'd be glad to pay you.
Not for coffee. It's on the house.
In that case, I'm obliged to you.
Trask picked up the shotgun he had set down on the counter and looked at Frank and Salty.
I don't mean to be inhospitable, but I really would like for you fellas to be out of town by sundown.
Oh, no, ain't nothing inhospitable about that.
Trask grinned. He nodded to Katie, touched a finger to the brim of his hat, and left the feed barn the same way he had entered, by the back door. Frank and Salty were the only customers in the place now. The ones who had fled earlier from the impending gunfight hadn't come back.
Looks like we cost you some business.
Don't worry about that. When it gets closer to supper time, they'll be back.
After eating your uncle's food, I would be too if I had my druthers. But we just got run out of town by the marshal.
I thought you wanted to ride on anyway.
I did. I do. I ain't in the market for trouble. But this food is mighty good.
I'll be sure to tell Solomon that you liked it.
From the sound of what you told the marshal, you and Hal Embry are acquainted.
No offense, Mr. Browning, but who I'm acquainted with isn't any of your affairs, is it?
No, ma'am, it certainly isn't. But from what I've seen of him, he seems like a fine young fella.
Oh, he is. He just doesn't need to always let his father and his sisters tell him what to do. Oh, never mind.
None of my affair.
I'm sorry I misjudged you earlier when I thought you were here in Pine Knob to hire on with Baldridge. I didn't know you'd already had trouble with Brady Morgan.
No way you could have known. And I'm sorry there was almost blood all over your floor and bullet holes in your walls.
When you put it that way, I feel guilty. I just didn't want anybody getting hurt.
Don't blame you for that. We better settle up. We owe you for 4 meals.
Oh, you only ate 2?
Yeah, but it wasn't your fault the first 2 went to waste.
Frank slid a $10 gold piece across the counter.
Is that enough to cover it?
More than enough. Well, that's too generous, Mr. Browning.
Well, I thought maybe I ought to pay for the Marshal's coffee, too, since I had something to do with him being here in the first place.
Even so, it's not going to do any good to argue with you, is it?
Never does me a blasted bit of good.
All right, then. Well, thank you, Mr. Browning.
You're welcome.
We're much obliged to you for the fine meal, ma'am.
Stop by any time you're in Pine Knob, Mr. Stevens.
After today, it ain't likely we will be, ma'am. You heard the Marshal.
Yes, I did.
Salty looked at the kitchen door where Solomon Storm was peeking through the narrow gap again.
So long, fella!
Solomon's head jerked back. Frank and Salty left the feed barn. The horses stood at the hitch rack with Wolf sitting nearby. Frank had worried a little that Brady Morgan and his men might have tried to mess with the animals, but he didn't think that was likely. If that had happened, they would have heard the ruckus inside the cafe as the big cur tore into the gunman.
We should have seen him. He could beg the bone from that pot roast for old Wolf. Still can if you want.
No, I think we'd better get on out of town. You heard what the Marshal told us.
Yeah, I heard it. But I didn't expect you to pay no attention to it. You ain't in the habit of worrying about what a lawman thinks.
That's where you're wrong. I'm a peaceable man.
When they reached the edge of town, they could see the slight elevation that gave the settlement its name. As Gage Carlin had told them, it had been cleared of trees, but a number of stumps remained. It was an ugly sight, sad in its way. They rode past the knob and followed a fairly well-defined trail that ran toward the eastern end of the valley. They would have to go past the headquarters of the B-Star if they continued in that direction. After the settlement had fallen out of sight behind them, Salty swept the horizon with his eyes.
Those hills in the south don't look too rugged. I bet we can cut through that way.
I was thinking the same thing.
Before they reached that long line, however, Frank pointed to the west.
Maybe we'll turn back that way.
You just can't stay out of it, can you? There's bullets flying around. You gotta be in the big middle of them.
I don't know who started out right and wrong in this, but it looks to me like Baldridge has stacked the deck against the Embrys, and that's wrong. I've got a hunch that if Baldridge really believed he could win in court, he wouldn't have brought in a bunch of hired guns.
You're probably right about that. So what are we gonna do? You heard Jubal Embry. If we go back to the box seat to try to help him, he's liable to shoot us both on sight.
Well, we'll just have to change his mind.
When they came to Loco Creek, they had to ride along the winding stream for a ways before they came to a place where they could ford it. The creek widened and grew shallower as it leaped and brawled over a gravel bed dotted with sandbars. With pine-covered hills and grassy meadows all around and snow-capped mountains rising majestically in the distance, the scene's beauty was a vivid reminder of why Frank loved the West so much. Once they were back on Box D range, Salty kept turning his head from side to side, peering around suspiciously.
You reckon there are bushwhackers behind every tree or something?
There could be. After seeing how all Hades usually breaks loose wherever you are, I wouldn't doubt it a bit. Anyway, we've already seen some Box E stock since we crossed the creek, and where there's cows, there's bound to be cowboys. Amber could have given his punchers order to ventilate us.
I suppose you're right. It won't hurt to keep our eyes open.
Darn right it won't.
They angled back toward the center of the valley, and soon Frank began to spot some landmarks he recognized from their ride through here earlier in the day, accompanied by Gage Carlin and the other 2 Box D hands. They were retracing their path, and if they continued in this direction, it would take them straight to the ranch headquarters.
Maybe we'd better be a mite more discreet about this. See that little ridge off to the left? There are enough trees on it to keep us from being spotted easily.
Good idea. Out in the open like this, I always get the feeling somebody might be looking at me over the barrel of a rifle.
They headed for the ridge and climbed into the pines. When they reached the top of the slope, Frank turned to the right. That would take them in the general direction of the Box D headquarters. It was past the middle of the afternoon, but the sun was still fairly high in the sky. The days were long this time of year. Every now and then, Frank and Salty saw a puncher or two on horseback in the distance, but none of the riders came close to them. Frank reined in and motioned for Salty to do likewise when he caught a glimpse of movements through a gap in the trees to their left. At first, He thought it might be one of the Box D ranch hands he had spotted. But as he looked closer, he made out two riders, and there was something furtive about the way they were ambling along, using the pines as cover in much the same way Frank and Salty were doing.
Who do you reckon they are?
Dang if I know. Some Embry's men, maybe?
Embry's men wouldn't have any reason to be sneaking around like that. We're gonna follow them.
That's what I figured.
For the next few minutes, Frank and Salty trailed the two riders, gradually working their way closer, all the while screened by a thick stand of brush. Frank halted long enough to dismount, take a pair of field glasses from his saddlebags, and push some branches aside to create a gap through which to study the two men. He didn't recognize either of them. They wore range clothes, but neither man carried a rope on his saddle. That was a sure indication that they weren't cowboys. The holstered revolvers on their hips were rather low slung, too.
Gunmen?
That's what they look like to me.
And I reckon you'd know. Bound to be some of Baldridge's men up to no good.
That's what I figure. Come on.
They started trailing the two riders again. They came to a waterfall. There were probably springs atop the bluff that fed the waterfall, and a tributary stream that ran across the valley and into Loco Creek. That was where the two mysterious riders seemed to be heading. They cut across an open pasture that bordered the thick band of pines running along the base of the bluff.
If we go across that pasture after them, all they'd have to do to see us is look back.
They don't seem to be paying much attention to what's behind them anymore. It's like they've almost reached their destination and they're in a hurry to get there.
Yeah, I reckon that's true.
We'll give them a minute and then go after them. Might be a good idea to leave Stormy and the pack horse here.
They tied the reins of the two extra horses to trees, then started after the gunmen. A tense few moments passed as Frank and Salty crossed the pasture. When they reached the trees, Frank signaled to Salty that they should dismount and go ahead on foot. Frank couldn't hear the hoofbeats of the other horses, couldn't hear anything except the roar of the waterfall and the splashing as it plunged into the pool it formed at the bottom of the bluff. Then, through the branches, he caught sight of the horses they had followed. Their saddles were empty. Frank slid his Colt from his holster. Salty followed suit. They crept forward, not worrying too much about any small noises they might make, because the waterfall's racket would cover them up. The two men they had followed were probably counting on that, too, as they snuck up on their quarry. A bushwhacking was what those men had in mind, Frank thought. Somebody else was at that waterfall, and the two gunmen planned to slip up and open fire on them. He didn't have that completely right, he realized, as he and Salty reached a spot where they could look down at the pool formed by the waterfall. A few yards in front of them, the two men they had followed crouched behind some rocks and stared intently at the pool. Or rather, they were staring at the beautiful young woman who stood there stark naked, knee-deep in the water as she let the spray from the waterfall cascade over her. Dark, wet hair hung down her back.
She ain't got a stitch on. It ain't proper of us looking at her.
I know.
Frank had averted his eyes from the young woman's nude form, too. He watched the two gunmen instead, who were nudging each other and grinning as they spied on her. He figured they had more in mind than just peeping toms. He was right. After a few moments, the two men rose from the concealment of the rocks and walked out boldly onto the gravelly stretch at the edge of the pool. The young woman had her back to them and obviously had no idea they were there.
Hey, Missy! Ah!
The pool was too shallow to do a much better job of concealment, so she backed off quickly until she was completely under the waterfall. The thick spray obscured her form, even if it didn't hide her completely.
You men shouldn't be here. Go away!
No chance of that, darling. Not till you come out of there and treat us friendly.
By God, I never backshot anybody in my life, but I'm fixing a start.
Hold on. I don't like what's going on either, but if we start shooting, the girl's liable to get hurt.
We can't just let them get away with this.
We won't.
Come on, sweet thing. We've already seen just about everything you got to show us.
My father and brother will kill you. You'll never leave the Box D alive.
Must be the Embry girl. I had a hunch that might be her.
Nobody knows we're here, Miss Embry. You just go along with what we say and we won't hurt you. You got my word on that.
Frank wasn't going to gun them down in cold blood, though. Instead, he lifted his revolver, nodded to Salty, and stepped out of the trees. The old-timer was right behind him as they leveled their Colts at the two men.
Don't move!
The men started to reach for the guns on their hips, but at the same time, Frank and Salty both drew back the hammers on their Colts.
Go ahead and twitch, you varmints! It'd be a plumb pleasure for me to ventilate your mangy hides.
Neither man moved. They seemed carved out of stone now.
Miss Embry, you stay right where you are for a minute. We'll get these men out of here.
Don't worry. I'm not coming out.
I'll cover them, Salty. You get their guns.
Can I use their own shooting irons to plug them? Seems like that'd be, what do you call, poetic justice.
I think you mean irony.
Shooting irony? I never heard of that.
Just get their guns.
All right, all right.
When my father finds out what you men have done, he'll horsewhip you and then hang you. They don't ride for the B-Star and kill your boss and his gunslinging toady.
Settle down, miss. We'll take care of these hombres. And if you want to press charges against them...
Press charges? For what they threatened to do? It'd be a waste of time. Besides, I don't want to have to stand up in court and say that they...
She couldn't go on, but Frank knew what she meant. It would be a humiliating ordeal for her to have to testify that the two gunmen had spied on her and seen her unclothed. And in the end, the two would probably be hanged anyway. Salty reached out to pluck the gun from one man's holster.
I wouldn't want to be in your boots. You fellas are done for.
Pointing out the sheer desperation of their situation might not have been the best thing to do. The man Salty had just disarmed suddenly threw himself backwards and sideways, crashing into the old-timer. As the two struggled, the other man took advantage of the distraction and whirled around as he clawed at the butt of his gun. Frank's shot missed. The gunman darted behind Salty and the other man as they staggered back and forth, fighting over the revolver. The first man finally succeeded in getting his gun away from Salty and smashed it against the old-timer's head. Frank leveled his pistol. The other man was making a dash for the trees where they had left their horses when they snuck up on Faye Embry. Dropping to one knee, Frank tracked his sights after the man and squeezed off a shot. Frank was worried about Salty. He was afraid that being pistol whipped like that might have resulted in a busted skull.
I didn't know any train tracks ran through here.
Train tracks?
Yeah, that was a locomotive that ran me over, wasn't it?
A smile tugged at Frank's mouth. He had a hunch Salty was going to be all right. Salty touched the lump on his head.
Got a damn goose egg. I'm sorry, Frank. I didn't think I was close enough for that varmint to jump me like that.
Don't worry about it. They're both done for. And we can clear out of here and let Miss Embry get dressed.
He had already spotted Faye's clothes lying spread out on one of the big rocks around the pool. Even though he had been trying not to look at her and invade her privacy, when he spoke her name, he couldn't help but glance in the direction of the waterfall. It was a good thing he did, because she was crumpled there behind the cascading water, apparently unconscious, or worse. Frank leaped to his feet and charged past the dead gunman into the pool. Water slammed down on Frank's broad-brimmed hat as he reached the falls. He couldn't worry about propriety now. He bent over and scooped Faye Embry into his arms. As he lifted her, he saw how her head lolled loosely on her neck. There was a raw streak on her forehead that started oozing blood again once she was out of the water. Frank recalled how the second gunman had fired wildly across the clearing as he tried to flee. One of those stray bullets had struck Faye. The wound didn't appear to be a bad one, just a nick that must have stunned her. But if she had fallen under the water while she was unconscious, she might be drowned. Salty was on his feet by the time Frank splashed out of the pool with Faye in his arms.
Is she alive?
I don't know.
Frank lowered her carefully to the ground.
Looks like a bullet creased her, but I don't see any other wounds.
Proper or not, he let his gaze travel along her bare body, searching for bullet holes or other injuries. Except for the scratch on her forehead, she seemed to be unharmed. And it was a mite embarrassing, but pretty difficult to miss the fact that her chest was rising and falling as she breathed. If she had swallowed any water, it hadn't been enough to choke her.
Get her dressed and spread it over her. She'll probably come around in a few minutes, and we don't want her waking up in a position like this. She's going to be upset enough just by everything that's happened so far.
Mm-hmm. Better be upset than dead.
Salty draped the gingham dress over Faye.
Those damn Ranahans would have killed her when they were done with her so she couldn't point no fingers at them later.
I figured that too.
The best thing to do for Faye now was to let her rest and wake up naturally. So he came to his feet and stepped back a little as he looked at Salty.
Are you all right? I wasn't finished checking you over when I saw what had happened to the girl.
I'm fine. It'd take more than a wallop with a six-gun to dent this old noggin of mine. I ever tell you about the time a mule kicked me in the head?
I don't think so, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, that blasted Jughead just hauled off and... Hey, wait a minute. What do you mean by that?
Nothing. I reckon I'm soaked to the skin.
He took off his hat and slung water from it, then placed it on top of a rock to dry.
I'll go get the horses. You got some spare duds, don't you?
Yeah, but not any extra boots. The sun's pretty warm. Maybe it won't take them too long to dry.
He kept a discreet eye on Faye while Salty went to fetch the animals. He came back leading the four horses with Wolf trotting ahead of him. Frank got dry clothes from the saddlebags and went into the trees to change. When he got back, walking in sock feet and carrying his boots and a wadded mass of wet clothing, he saw that Faye still hadn't regained consciousness. A worried frown creased his forehead. She was taking longer to come to than he had expected.
I thought she'd be awake by now.
Reckon she'll have to take her own sweet time about it. You think we ought to drag these dead coyotes off so when she wakes up she won't have to look at their ugly carcasses?
That's a good idea.
Salty went to grab the feet of the man lying at the edge of the pool, but Frank waved him off.
You need rest. I'll take care of this.
Salty stood aside and allowed Frank to drag the corpse into the trees. Frank did the same with the other dead man, and then hunkered on his heels beside the bodies to check their pockets. He didn't come up with much. Both men carried cigarette makings, and they had more money than cowboys usually carried, upward of $50 each. One had a deck of greasy, much-used cards, and the other had an envelope in his shirt pocket that had been folded over several times. This was the man who had fallen in the water, so the envelope was wet and whatever had been written on it had washed away. The same was true of the sheet of paper that Frank carefully slid out of it. The ink had run, leaving only indecipherable blue smears. The letter must have meant something to this man for him to have hung on to it. Even hired killers had families, sweethearts, friends. But whatever the letter contained was gone, just like the life of the man who had carried it. Frank left the bodies there and went to bring in the horses the men had left in the trees. They were good animals, nothing fancy but solid mounts. He didn't recognize the brand on either of them, untying the reins from the saplings where they had been fastened. He led the horses back to the pool. When he got there, Faye Embry still hadn't regained consciousness. And Salty was starting to look worried, too.
You reckon we better try to get her clothes on her and take her back to her pa's place?
We may have to. Maybe there's a doctor in Pine Knob at...
He turned toward the sound, his hand moving closer to his gun as he did so. But he stopped the motion as he spotted several rifle barrels poking out from behind nearby trees.
What the hell have you done to my daughter?